My name is Mark Ford, and I'm sitting with Steve Levine in the den of our house in Nicaragua, overlooking the Pacific Ocean, in a community called Rancho Santana.
A community which you and your partners developed.
We did indeed.
And starting about how many years ago?
We first came down here to look at the property in 1996, and then the following year we started the initial development, clearing some land and so on.
It's amazing what you achieved. I was here about 15 years ago, and you had some homes and a small clubhouse, and now it's a huge enterprise. And so how many homes and condos and hotel rooms do you have here today?
You know, it's funny you ask that, because I was asked that 2 days ago, and I gave completely the wrong answer. Altogether, it's around 200, I think.
Just this year, Travel and Leisure magazine named Rancho Santana one of the top five resorts in Central America. It's also on the list for the top 100 hotels in the world.
But when I came down here, it was so unusual for an American to be here that I was hosted at the American ambassador's house. I stayed overnight at his house the first night. It was years before I was ever on a plane coming down here where I wasn't the only gringo.
Mark and his business partners publish a magazine called International Living. The focus is on attractive places for Americans to retire or to have a second home abroad. The magazine's first choice some 20 years ago for where to live on a budget was Nicaragua. So Mark decided to check out some of the available land himself using the local mode of transportation.
I found myself on a donkey trying to cross a river and being led by another man in a donkey that was wearing a bandolero. Carrying a shotgun.
They were not, as you might have guessed, in downtown Managua.
And the water was up to my thighs, and I was imagining piranha or snakes coming after me. And I was thinking, God, you're such an adventurer, Mark.
I suggested he was like Indiana Jones or Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah, something like that.
Did Mark have to wrestle piranhas and snakes? Or would he be brought down by the fact that he was deep in a remote part of Nicaragua with little grasp of Spanish? I'm Steve Levine, and this is America the Bilingual. Welcome back to my conversation with the intrepid Mark Ford, who, as it turned out, did not have to battle piranhas and snakes, but there were plenty of challenges to realizing his Rancho Santana dream.
You know, I always admired Flagler for coming to Florida when it was a mosquito-infested swamp.
Flagler, who was John D. Rockefeller's right-hand
man.
That's
right. He spent a fortune in Florida.
Building the railroad and all these hotels. So in a way, you followed Flagler a little farther south.
Well, I mean, that's how I flattered myself. But Flagler had the advantage of having done a lot of construction already. We knew nothing about property development.
Starting with infrastructure, there was the minor matter of having no utilities, no running water, no roads.
So anyway, we bought 1,800 acres for a very low price, and then we started developing it and spending money.
Well, what you've created here is a sensational thing. We're high in the hills overlooking an incredible ocean and beach, and there's a lot of surfers down there. Mm-hmm. This is a noted place for surfers of the world.
Yeah, one of the things, little stories about that is, about the third time I came down here when we had already decided we were going to buy this place. There are five beaches on this property, and I came down to this, the one we're looking at right now, which is one of the two longest beaches. And in the distance, I see what looks like to be a guy with a surfboard. And again, this is a time when I was the only gringo down here. And so I walked down the beach, and sure enough, it was a gringo, and he had a surfboard. And I'm like, what are you doing here? He goes, I come down here every year or something. He goes, but don't tell anybody. I said, why? This is an amazing wave here. This is the greatest wave. I only want my friends to know. I didn't know anything about surfing at the time.
Mark immediately went back to the U.S. and shared the secret with his financial analyst, who's a surfer.
Within a year, we had surf magazines down here, and then within 2 years, we were having international surf contests.
And now some of those surfers live at the resort.
Maybe a third of our population here, our residents here, are middle-aged men who surf.
Mark's comparison to Henry Flagler, whose Florida East Coast Railroad paved the way for his fashionable resorts all the way to Key West, is apt. But Mark had a challenge that Flagler didn't, dealing with a different language.
A lot of people would have been afraid to embark on a big development in a country where another language is spoken. Was that a problem for you?
Not the language part. And I'll just say that everything I've done in my life that's turned out to be successful, if I had any idea of the trouble and cost and angst it would cause me, I would never, never have done it. And this is one of them.
So you're saying ignorance is an asset?
Well, for me, it was. I'm not an entrepreneur that takes risks. My whole thing is avoiding risk, but I'm determined. So if you're ignorant and you make a mistake that can be fixed by being determined, then it works out sometimes. But as far as the language is concerned, no.
Tell me about your language journey here, your Spanish journey. Did you ever do anything formal, or was it just on the job?
The only formal Spanish I took was with Mr. Ringwald in 10th grade.
Somehow it doesn't sound like a Spanish name, Ringwald.
He was a German man and very strict.
Not that that necessarily matters, but
by the time I got into his class, he had my reputation had preceded me.
Uh-oh. He must have been a bad kid.
I had my own set of goals that didn't coincide with the schools. But yeah.
Despite not being proficient in Spanish, Mark was no stranger to other languages. Both he and his business partner spoke fluent French. His partner had studied at a French university. Mark learned his French in Africa as a member of the Peace Corps.
As I recall, you lied to the Peace Corps about your French ability.
Where'd you get that information? yeah, I did.
Not to put too fine a point on it.
Well, when... back in that time, which is, I think, around 75, if I'm not mistaken, it was very difficult to get into Peace Corps. I always saw Peace Corps as something kind of exotic and fun. I thought that maybe I could go overseas. I couldn't afford to go overseas myself. I had no money. And learn. And if I could go to a country that spoke a foreign language, that was a plus, you know, rather than taking courses. I had been accepted into a PhD program. This is in English literature. I knew there was no future for me in that. I was attending bar and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. So to heighten my chances of getting accepted, I checked off a lot of boxes that maybe I shouldn't have.
Mark explained that the Peace Corps admissions people would often interview candidates in person before sending them overseas, but in his case, they didn't.
They just thought that you were telling the truth when you checked the box.
Apparently,
that you
yes.
already were pretty proficient in French.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Not surprisingly, Mark did not do well when they tested his knowledge of French.
There's a Department of State scale. I think it was 1 to 4. 4 was completely fluent. I got a 0. and... that was a bit of a problem.
There was another guy who scored 0 in the group called Omo. So the Peace Corps decided it would cost too many zeros to send these 2 zeros back to the U.S.
So everybody went to their classes, but they had to create a special class for us because we were 0. I mean, the least was like 2 or 2.5. And each of the classes were named by a certain town or city in Chad. And the name of our classroom was the most remote city in the deepest part of the desert.
And there, deep in the desert, metaphorically speaking, Mark and his partner in Zero pledged to speak not a word of English for the 10 weeks they spent learning French in the classroom.
The good part was that we were being taught by university students, and these guys loved us because Gromo was a... he had a funny sense of humor. And when the teacher used to say to us, répétez, which means repeat, you know, répétez, répétez, Grom and I would say together, mais nous ne pas encore pété, which means, but we haven't farted yet. And, so, you know, this is a joke. Pété means fart, and répété means repeat. So
you can't repeat fart until you farted?
Exactly. That was our objection. But we made that joke for the entire 6 weeks or however long it was, and they laughed.
Every time.
While this broke everybody up, Mark never broke his vow to speak only in French.
That's quite a pledge. Why did you take it so seriously?
Well, because first of all, you know, it was one of my goals to learn French. And I just...
lied like a snake.
Well, maybe there's a little guilt involved.
After the 10 weeks, they tested Mark again.
I was basically fluent. And by the time I left there, I was, you know, as near to fluent as you could be. I thought in French and I spoke comfortably in French.
After the Peace Corps, Mark returned to the U.S. and entered the PhD program in literature at Catholic University.
But you had to pass a test in two languages. So I did French and this advanced intense course in Latin. And if you completed two semesters of this, you would qualify. And I was very intent. I want to learn Latin because, you know, I was an altar boy in high school and I knew that Latin was, you know.
So you were a goof off in high school, but you were also an altar boy.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, Mark had a German instructor, a woman this time. And once again, just as he did with Spanish in high school, Mark fell woefully behind.
I was going to fail this thing. And so I got an interlinear book, a translation.
An interlinear book shows text in the original language and a word-for-word translation directly beneath it.
I started reading through with English to try to pick apart a passage that I thought might interest her particular personality. And then I went ahead and memorized those 6 or 10 pages.
Ah, I'm seeing a pattern here. Picking your way through.
Picking my way through. Yeah. So I go into the class. I open up the book. She goes, go to page such and such. I go, and it's bing right on the number.
Oh, you lucky son of a...
He did this not once, but twice, despite telling himself that he had to repent. At the end of the class, his instructor called him up to her desk.
She goes, if you do not spend your life as a linguist, it'll be a terrible tragedy. You're a natural genius in language. I feel a little bad sometimes about it because I think that if only that luck had been transferred to Las Vegas, I could be...
But you did learn some Latin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my Latin is... I would say my Latin is back to altar boy stage. It helped me study French and Spanish because they're Romance languages and they have the same structure.
So your project here in Nicaragua, how have you used your Spanish?
Well, the obvious thing is that when I came down here, nobody spoke English. If I was going to spend any time down here, I would have to learn to speak some amount of Spanish.
And you did.
And I did. I think the major push for me was not so much here, because when I would come to the ranch, my interactions were mostly with senior staff. And those guys did speak decent to good English. But I started a project here across the street, community project called Fun Limon, yeah.
A foundation.
A foundation, right. I was here every month for the setting up, building the foundation. So, yeah, so I was much more in the day-to-day than, and our clients were non-English speakers.
Mm-hmm. Why did you set up that foundation?
Well, because I never learned how to say no properly in my life. I didn't have, from just the one or two stories I told you, I never had the wisdom to prepare myself properly for things. And so I just figured if I kept saying yes to things, that eventually something good would happen.
The foundation helps the local people in the Rancho Santana area who are, by almost all standards, quite poor. The trigger was when one local Nicaraguan mother approached Mark, asking him to help her with her baby.
The baby had a hare lip. I never seen a hare lip before.
Uh-huh.
It's very shocking.
Through a bilingual worker who had accompanied him, Mark learned that the mother was asking if he would pay for the operation to have it fixed.
And I thought, oh boy, you know, I'd love to do this. This poor kid, or he's going to have to grow up like this.
Yeah.
At that time, there's no way you're going to get this fixed.
And just for perspective, we are 5 hours from the Capitol.
Yeah. There was no running water. There was no electricity. All the floors were dirt. People were subsistence farming.
And it was 5 hours from the Capitol because the roads were not paved.
Right, right. I'm thinking, oh, I really have to do this. But I'm thinking, oh, this is going to cost me like 10 grand or something. You have to go to Managua, where they have a good hospital there, the Vian Pelas Hospital. And as it turns out, the price tag was $500.
Wow.
So when I found that, I was like, whoa, yeah, I like practically threw the money at her. I was so excited to be able to make such a, you know, do something so tangibly, inarguably good.
News of Mark's good deed spread quickly.
I literally would wake up in the morning and there would be a line of 6, 8, 16 people.
Hardly a sustainable way to help. Mark had a new idea. He would start a community foundation right across the road from Rancho Santana.
The first thing, I'd put up a shack so I could walk over there once a day and talk to the people there.
So you'd go to the line rather than the line coming to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, that was the beginning of it. And now we have a full-scale community center here. We have, I don't know how many people working for us every week. And we educate hundreds of people and provide sports complex for hundreds more. And then we have a kids park. And then inside, we have a fully equipped gym by, you know, almost American standards, a martial arts room. We have English and literacy. We teach Spanish literacy. We teach a whole variety of trades. We have a management course. We have computer courses. One of the things that my partner, Antonio, insisted on, Antonio Granados, he said from the very beginning that we have to hire local people.
So you had to create your plumbers and electricians here.
Right.
And that's what you've done.
Yeah. So this is the way the system works. There are dozens and dozens of resorts nearby, and they have a fairly large market for all these different trades. So what we do is once a year, we interview all the projects, and we find out what they're going to be needing. There's always several, but sometimes there's a shortage in electricians or plumbing, or sometimes, like the last time we looked, there was big shortages in refrigerator repair guys.
Uh-huh.
So what we do is we get a master craftsman and we set up a program that's designed to take somebody from knowing nothing to apprenticeship level quality.
Uh-huh.
And so they're learning a skill that not only is useful generally, but is immediately useful in the market.
So they can get employed immediately.
Yeah, and not only that, but we pre-interview with these resorts and communities that need those type of employees. We get them to agree to hire them as apprentices. And so they basically go right from us into the working world. Our rule is do less harm than good, because I still believe very firmly that spending money charitably is just as difficult as it is to make it. And it can cause as much or more damage.
Yeah. So the tourism that's developed here in Nicaragua, you were kind of the tip of the arrow for that.
The minister of tourism came to me and then she said, when you came to Nicaragua, tourism was 2% of our GDP. Today it's 20%. And I want you to know that we know it was you that started it.
Wow. So thinking of your Spanish abilities, can you finish the sentence? I'll never forget the time when.
Well, I'm going to expand it to French too, just because I have a thought in mind about that. And that is, by my second year in Africa, I had a lot of French friends. And my French was at a 4.0 level, but it wasn't sophisticated French. And although my grammar was good, I just, you know, the French love to make everything more sophisticated than it has to be. So in any case, I somehow noticed, no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't have the same personality in French that I had in English. In English, I fancy myself as being kind of clever with the language and so on. But I couldn't do that. I was much blunter in French. And I realized that my French friends who loved me the way in Friends they loved Joey. You know, the Joey character in Friends?
You mean kind of not too swift?
Not too swift, yeah.
But funny.
Funny, lovable, a little bit dumb, yeah. It didn't bother me at all. It was like I was given another way to be a person that they all liked.
So you were literally living another life in French.
Yeah, and they liked me for different reasons, which only made me feel better.
What do you say to our fellow Americans who say, well, why bother learning a new language? The whole world speaks English.
Well, I
would say
you're
kind of smiling now.
Yeah, I mean, there's some truth to that. If you are a affluent American and you travel the way affluent Americans do, you'll always be fine speaking English because English is the international language of wealth and money. And if you think you're going on an exotic tour with a guide that you pay $7,000 a day to, believe me, everybody you've run into will speak English, including the rustic carpet weaver that he's going to introduce you to. But I would say the main benefit that I've had from speaking two and a half languages is that, you know, my world is just way more opened up. If you're going to France and you're doing it the English way, you are only seeing a slice of France. I mean, when you can have conversations in French with children, with shopkeepers, France is an entirely different culture, and it's hard to get that. You might not know that when you walk into a shop in France, you are the guest of the shopkeeper. You're not the customer is always right. So you better speak properly. You can speak English, but you better be polite and use French mannerisms, or they're going to start saying things in French to you that are insulting.
What's a French mannerism?
Reserved, proper, almost the opposite of American, you know, sophisticated, careful. That's the style of not all French people, but certainly when you're in the big cities. The thing about the French versus the British is that the British love to say, excuse me. But they also love to knock you over in a line and, you know, bump into you. Excuse me, excuse me, excuse me. The French will never bump into you.
Yeah.
But if they do by accident, you will never get them to say, I'm sorry. And I learned this from years of having French friends and being in France and even the French people I knew in Africa. So I was at an airport, a French airport, and I went to crack the egg on the bar, which is supposed to be hard boiled, and it wasn't.
Oops.
And it got over me. And so I said to the bartender in French, I said, what's going on? And he was giving me the snobby routine. But I knew my French was good enough. And I just went at him, and we went at it. And finally, he backed down. And the only reason he backed down was because my French was, you know, it's not as native as his, but
right.
I could keep up with him.
Right.
No problem. I was kind of on equal footing. And I could see him starting to soften up when he realized that I was, at least I could speak the language reasonably well.
That's such an important story because a lot of people think they're failures as language students if they're not mistaken for a native speaker.
It's almost impossible to get to the level where they're going to mistake you, except for maybe they only hear one phrase.
It really doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, no. It can even be charming for them if you just relax and be yourself. You're less threatening, really, especially in cultures like France or Asian cultures where formality is an important part of relationships.
They cut you a little slack.
They cut you a little slack.
On the formality side, because they realize you're just an idiot and don't really know how to use the language properly.
I like to think more. I like to think of Joey from Friends.
I know exactly what you're talking about because I'm that way in Spanish. I can't be clever in Spanish. I can't be the smart guy that I think I am sometimes in English. Mm-hmm. Have you found that people appreciate your attempts to speak Spanish, even if it's imperfect?
Absolutely.
You know, Mark, your language stories are great, but the accomplishment in Rancho Santana is a big part of the story, and it should be. You weren't afraid to come to a country that doesn't speak English or didn't speak English at the time.
Yeah, and having some comfort with language speaking or listening.
Okay, so he dodged the Latin a bit. But when I think of how Mark learned French, he really is like Indiana Jones. dropping himself into a situation that might have been disastrous and turning it into something else entirely. So it's not surprising that he has his own system for learning a language.
My secret to learning language is that this is what I did with French. Every Romance language has a regular and irregular verbs, okay? The irregular verbs are the verbs that are used most often. Like 70% of the verbs you use will consist of 20 verbs, and they're irregular. The reason that they're used so often is because they convey 70 to 80% of everything you will ever want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So my rule in learning a language is to memorize those irregular conjugations. So not only do you have them correct, but you can hear them, you understand them. That's really where the language
and
is.
And you can say them.
And you can say them.
So it's the muscle memory of saying it over and over again.
Right, exactly. So that's the first thing, that you memorize those. Don't worry so much about the regular verbs. You got two or three different endings and that's it. But and usually the regular verbs also, a lot of them are cognates. So that's almost like an academic side step to me.
What do you say to the Americans that say, well, why bother learning another language when we're going to have the technology that just does the automatic translation? What do you say to them?
Well, I say that I hope that you're younger than me, because that technology is coming, but I may be gone before it does. I don't know. I mean, if the technology gets to the point where you literally are talking to each other fluently and you're hearing through the piece embedded in your ear what they're saying and vice versa, I'm sure people will be fine with it. But all I can say is that in my life, I'm very glad that I have some extra languages, and it's made my life much richer.
My thanks to the members of the America the Bilingual Project team for this episode. Mim Harrison, editorial and brand director of the America the Bilingual Project, who wrote and directed the episode. Fernando Hernandez Becerra and his production house in Guadalajara, Mexico, Esto No Es Radio, which provides sound design and mixing, and Jen Cavanaro at Darumatech, who manages our website. Also, I'd like to share with you that we have a new language learning workbook available called How to Learn a Language for Life. It's written by myself and my co-author, Akshay Swaminathan, whom you met in an earlier episode of our podcast. You can find the workbook at levenger.com. Thanks for listening. Gracias por escuchar. Be sure to visit americathebilingual.com to enjoy the episode notes for this conversation with Mark Ford and all of our episodes. For America the Bilingual, I'm Steve Levine.